On April 4th, 1968, James Baldwin was sitting in a swimming pool with Billy Dee Williams at his house in Palm Springs, California, listening to Aretha Franklin when the phone rang. Baldwin picked it up to hear the voice of his friend David Moses. "Jimmy," he said, "Martin's been shot." Baldwin dropped the phone and wept immediately. Later, Billy Dee Williams said, "Martin's death was with Jimmy for a long time. I doubt if he ever got over it. Much of his hope died with King." Later, after King died, Nina Simone wrote a song entitled "The King of Love is Dead," in which she sings, "He had seen the mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop, always living with the threat of death ahead. So folks, you better stop and think. Everybody knows we're on the brink. What will happen now that the King of Love is dead?" I have to wonder if Jesus felt like James Baldwin or Nina Simone in 1968 when the disciples came to tell him the news that John the Baptist was dead. Can you imagine how his heart must have sank down in his chest? We know that Jesus looked up to John with deep love and admiration as a mentor. Some scholars even believe that Jesus began his ministry as one of John's disciples. We know they were incredibly close and shared a common mission. Both were prophets who spoke truth to power and called people to repentance. John's death was not just the loss of a friend, but the end of a movement, the end of an era with multiple leaders who were working to restore Israel to a community of love. I wonder what went through Jesus' mind when he heard the news that John had been beheaded by King Herod. What were the hopes and dreams that died with John? Matthew simply tells us that when Jesus heard the news of John's execution, he withdrew in a boat to a deserted place all by himself. Jesus needed time to grieve. He needed time to get away from it all. He needed to process what that tremendous loss would mean for him and for the world. So Jesus got off in a boat and set off into the wilderness. This wasn't the first time that Jesus had withdrawn away. It was actually the fifth time in the Gospel of Matthew that Jesus withdrew in response to an act of aggression from an imperial power. To withdraw is to refuse to play in the tyrant's world by a tyrant's rule. To withdraw is to make space within us and in our world for something else to be born from the grief and trauma of our lived reality. To withdraw is to take time to recover our purpose and to open up our hearts and to release the potential of a new possibility, a new way forward. Sometimes when the loss and the grief is too much to bear, we just have to withdraw. We have to go into ourselves and into the solitude of a deserted place to get away from it all and to find ourselves, to find our way through the fog of loss and despair. Scholar Eddie Gloud contends that James Baldwin's life provides the key to surviving and mustering the strength to keep on fighting, even when there's been so much death and when it feels like all is lost. In his last novel, Just Above My Head, Baldwin wrote, "When the dream was slaughtered, and all that love and labor seemed to have come to nothing, we scattered. In other words, we withdrew. We knew where we'd been and what we tried to do, who had cracked and gone mad and died or been murdered around us. And yet, not everything is lost. Responsibility cannot be lost. It can only be abdicated. If one refuses abdication, one begins again." All is not lost, friends. Responsibility cannot be lost. Responsibility is a powerful word. I take Baldwin here to mean that no matter what we lose, we never lose our responsibility for our lives or each other. We never lose our responsibility to our ancestors who came before us, our responsibility to our fellow human beings who live on earth with us right now, and our responsibility to our children and grandchildren, all the future generations who will come after we are gone. And what is our responsibility to our ancestors, our fellow earthlings, and future generations? Love. Love is our responsibility. Love God and love your neighbor. These are the greatest of all the commandments. Love the stranger, the orphan, the widow. Love the enemy. Love is our moral responsibility. And that means that when everything else fades away and it seems like all is lost, love remains. Paul said, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. After John the Baptist was executed, after his movement had died, after his disciples had dispersed, after their hopes and dreams were dashed, after Jesus heard about his friend and mentor's death, after he got in a boat and withdrew to a deserted place to be alone, when everything seemed as if it was lost, love and responsibility remain. Jesus' time in the wilderness, grieving and regrouping, was interrupted by a great crowd that came out and followed him there. It turns out Jesus was not the only one who was grieving and struggling to make it through the fog of despair. Jesus was not alone. There were thousands who needed to withdraw into a deserted place. Maybe they remembered the stories of the wilderness in the book of Exodus and hoped that this deserted place would turn out to be a site of liberation and healing as it had been for their ancestors. Or maybe they followed Jesus into the wilderness hoping to escape from political oppression in Rome as their ancestors had escaped the oppression of the empire in Egypt. Whatever the reason, when Jesus saw them, we are told he had compassion for them. His love and his responsibility for them had not been lost in grief. It endured. Now, in Greek, to be moved with compassion literally means to be moved in one's bowels, because at the time, the bowels were thought to be the seat of love and empathy. Everybody knows what it feels like to be suddenly hit by a bowel movement. It can feel extremely urgent and quite painful. Now, a less grotesque metaphor of compassion for our culture might be to translate this passage, and when Jesus saw the crowd, he felt like he had been punched in the gut with compassion for them. The word conveys the deepest kind of feeling that a person can have for another, an overwhelming feeling of passion and empathy, love and responsibility. Jesus could not have simply gotten over his feelings of grief over the murder of his beloved friend and mentor John at the hands of the state and King Herod. He was still grieving, but his compassion for the crowd outweighed his grief. His love and his sense of responsibility for them gave him the strength to keep on going, to take the next step, and to begin again, because his love never ended. Jesus was so overwhelmed by compassion that he healed people all day long until it was late in the day, so late that the disciples started to become anxious about a problem that they could see emerging on the horizon, the problem of hunger, the problem of food. No one in the crowd at that point had complained that they were hungry. But when it was evening, the disciples came to Jesus and said, "This is a deserted place that we are in, Jesus, and the hour is now late in the day. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." You have to love the disciples here. They're so practical and pragmatic. Jesus is doing all the spiritual stuff and healing people, but we're holding on to the money and we maintain the schedule. Time is money, and it's getting late, and we're in a desert. At some point, these people are going to get hungry, and there are thousands of them. So let's get Jesus to send them away before dinner so we don't have to be responsible for feeding them. The disciples' way of thinking is the opposite of responsibility, which means that it is the opposite of love. They don't wait for the problem to actually occur. They don't even wait for someone in the crowd to get hungry and cry out for food. In their anxiety, they manifest a future problem. They anticipate a potential crisis, and then they try to abdicate responsibility for caring for the needs of the people as fast as possible before it even rises to the surface as a problem. As children, we were taught to read the disciples' behavior in this story as an innocent setup for Jesus to perform the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fish. But something far more nefarious is at work in their suggestion to Jesus, their desire to abdicate responsibility. And while that feels natural and human, it reveals the insidious logic of scarcity, the idea that there's simply not enough for everyone in our world. On the surface, it seems like a pure question about logistics, but in reality, there is a subtle rejection of compassion and love and neighborliness and responsibility that is betrayed in the disciples' words and actions. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. Just think of all the destruction that has been wrought in the world in the name of practicality and logistics. All that is required for oppression to take root and to rule our world is for people to simply abdicate responsibility. Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel famously said, "The opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference." Or as Baldwin once wrote, "The subtle and deadly change of heart that might occur if we realize that civilization is not destroyed by the wicked people, but by the spineless." Saying, "send the crowds away," is the equivalent of ignoring the cries of the world. It's the same as saying, "let them take care of themselves. Their hunger is not our problem. Let the market provide for their needs. I am not my brother or sister's keeper." This is not, however, the language of love. We live at a time in history when no one wants to take responsibility. In this age of irresponsibility, it seems like every day a new leader in our society professes their unwillingness to take responsibility for something, even if it is obviously their responsibility. Everybody's passing the buck and shirking their duty, and the lack of responsibility in our world not only exposes a lack of leadership, but a lack of love. Love is not a feeling or an emotion or a warm sentiment alone. Baldwin once said, "True love is desperately sought and cunningly avoided, because love takes off masks that we fear we cannot live without and that we know we cannot live within." He said, "I use the word love here not merely in the personal sense or the infantile American sense of being made happy, but in the tough and universal sense of quest and daring and growth." Jesus teaches us that love and responsibility go hand in hand. Love never abdicates responsibility. Love always takes responsibility. Love always takes responsibility for the material well-being of those in need. Love rejects the logic of scarcity with the good news of God's abundance. Love responds to the hunger of the world with compassion. Love transcends the spiral of personal grief with acts of healing. That is why Jesus rebuked the disciples and said, "The crowds do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. You figure it out. You are your brother and sister's keeper. They are your responsibility." That is the way that love talks. Jesus rejected the logic of scarcity and instructed the disciples in the language of love and responsibility. Love says, "They don't need to go away. We will feed them. They are our people." Love says, "There's always enough to go around. There's always enough for more COVID relief. There's always enough for more unemployment checks. There's always enough for another stimulus. There's enough to protect people from eviction. There's enough to forgive people's debts. There's enough food and resources to go around." Love says there is not enough for everyone's greed, but there is enough always for everyone's need. The miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 was not that God multiplied the loaves and fishes in some act of magic. The miracle is that people took responsibility for each other and shared what they had, and there was enough for everyone. Everyone was filled, and there were plenty of leftovers as well. Miracles happen when we realize that we are all responsible for one another. The same way that Jesus grieved the death of John the Baptist, yet found compassion for the crowds to carry on his ministry of healing and feeding, James Baldwin grappled with profound disillusionment after the murder of Dr. King, and yet held on to his faith in the possibility of a world where we could be our full selves, which he referred to as a new Jerusalem. In 1972, he wrote, "An old world is dying, and a new one, kicking in the belly of its mother time, announces that it is ready to be born. And this birth will not be easy. And many of us are doomed to discover that we are exceedingly clumsy midwives. But no matter what, so long as we accept that our responsibility is to the newborn, the acceptance of that responsibility contains the key to our future. In spite of how much death and loss and betrayal Baldwin faced throughout his life, he never gave up on the dream of a beloved community, a community that takes responsibility, a community that feeds the hungry, a community of nurturance where wounds are healed, a community that fortifies the soul and offers a balm for what ails our society. In our time that is filled with so much hatred and venom, we must continue to actively cultivate communities of love like our church, which allows us to imagine and experiment with different and more life-giving ways of being together. Communities of joy, communities of genuine mutuality and sharing. Like Jesus, Baldwin never gave up on love and love never gave up on him. At the very end of his life, he wrote, "It is impossible to claim salvation and also to believe that one is better than another human being. There is absolutely no salvation without love," he wrote. "Salvation does not divide. Salvation connects people. It is not the exclusive property of any dogma, creed, or church. It keeps the channel open between oneself and whoever one wishes to name. It has absolutely nothing to do with one's fortunes or circumstances and one's passage through this world. It is a mighty fortress, even in the teeth of ruin or at the gates of death." We are living through the ruinous era of COVID-19. An era of monumental irresponsibility and extreme partisan division, a time of horrific loss and death and great uncertainty about the future. It seems like the sand is constantly shifting under our feet and everything is changing. But the good news is that all is not lost. One thing remains invincible, and that is love. So that means that we can make our way through the fog and never give in to despair, by taking it day to day and placing one foot in front of the other and doing the next right thing and holding on to the truth that when everything else fades away, love is what remains. We can carry on through this trial knowing that love can endure the most unimaginable disasters. Love can endure imperial negligence and aggression. Love can endure the death of a prophet or the loss of a friend. Love can endure grief and disillusionment and despair. Love can endure the loneliness of the desert or large crowds in need of healing. Love can endure a political disaster. Love can endure a global pandemic. And love has the power to create a beloved community. So no matter how terrifying or awful things get, all is not lost. Responsibility cannot be lost. And love endures all things. And that means the future is never closed. We will always have the opportunity to keep on going, to keep on loving, to start over, and to begin again. Amen.